The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Gwinnett County voters opted not to board the MARTA train. So what's next for the traffic-smothered county? Meanwhile, at the state capitol, big fights over abortion and an airport takeover are heading into their final rounds. And on a visit home from the U.S. Capitol, Georgia Senator Johnny Isaacson went after President Trump for his continued attacks on the late Senator John McCain. Just a few of the selections on the menu for this political breakfast. It is a pleasure to have you with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare, and our regulars are back. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist, communications consultant, and former deputy chief of staff for former Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist, public affairs and government consultant, and former National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Hey, guys, welcome back.
Good morning. Good to be back. It's been a long time.
I don't have anything to say. Yeah, Brian's got it.
Theron's being quiet because, in full disclosure here, because we're about to talk about the Gwinnett MARTA referendum, both of them worked on the yes side of this, and now that the campaign is over, they are back. That's why they sat out last time. This is the third time that Gwinnett has rejected MARTA. So what happened?
I'll go first. I think that the lazy journalism that I saw from all news outlets that continue to recycle a very misleading poll that did not weigh the electric turnout correctly. That was the first thing. You can weigh it in any particular way to develop the outcome that you really want to get. But be that as it may, listen, congratulations to the opposition. They ran a good campaign. And I do believe that transit will eventually be expanded to Gwinnett County. I think that it will happen in my lifetime. It just, the voters who came out in March versus the voters who came out in November of last year had a different agenda. And look, they turned out. But I think that Gwinnett voters will now pay more attention to next steps. And when this referendum comes back up, I believe in 2020.
I have a slightly different take on it than Theron. I don't think the no campaign was a campaign at all. The status quo always has a benefit in a referendum, in a special election particularly. A special election electorate is not representative of the electorate at large. And I think many people agree. I think the no side would agree that this would have passed, and by a comfortable margin, had it been on the ballot in November.
And this is what we heard from the state Democratic Party. Nikema Williams.
Don't associate me with that.
I know, but it was too good to resist.
Yeah.
Because she said, look, this would have made it in November. She blamed the defeat on the placement of this particular issue on a ballot by itself in March.
Democrat, Republican, no or yes, I think anybody would agree that the outcome would have been different in a general election. It was done that way for a reason, and I think it was done that way for a poorly thought out reason. You know, Republicans didn't want it on the general election ballot, because they thought it would bring out Democrats to vote yes. Well, what did we find out Tuesday? It actually brought out Republicans to vote no. And Republicans suffered a bloodbath in Gwinnett in November. Perhaps having this on the ballot in November would have saved a few of those state House seats where Republicans lost seats that they had held for many, many, many years. So I think that, as Theron said, this is the beginning of a conversation that's going to continue. I think Gwinnett voters will get another say at it. But my bottom line is this. For a decision this big, this monumental about the future of the county and the region, we need to have a bigger electorate. Put it on the general election ballot.
Theron, one of the issues that has always been under the surface when Gwinnett looks at MARTA has been the issue of race. Was that as big an issue, though, do you think, this time as it has been in the past?
I do.
Because diverse is – Gwinnett's a lot more diverse now.
Yeah. And, you know, listen, that's something that when we started this campaign, if you had told me that the level of the stain that white voters in particular had against MARTA, I would have never believed you. I mean, it was clear the stain that they had for MARTA. I mean, they talked about – just the rumors that are not true about it's going to bring crime, which I believe was a racial undertone. They talked a lot about the finances. They put out a lot of false narratives about MARTA not being a sufficiently run authority, which is not true. It's the second safe authority in the country, and actually it's got a reserve of hundreds of millions of dollars. I do think we should have embraced the racial undertone and component to this election, because as Brian just said, the MARTA referendum was what Donald Trump is to Democrats. The reason why I think Brian Kemp, Governor Kemp, lost so bad against Stacey Abrams is, one, I think Stacey Abrams ran a good campaign in that county, but also a lot of white
women. When you're saying lost so bad, you mean in Gwinnett.
In Gwinnett, yeah, I'm sorry, last Gwinnett. He lost by 14.
He won.
Lost so bad in Gwinnett. Is Donald Trump was connected to him, right? But he, like we should have done, took that, right? Said, all right, you know, I'm going to take President Trump's endorsement, is going to lose Gwinnett for me possibly in other metro counties, but I'm going to ultimately win the ultimate prize. And so I do think that there also, and I must be fair, there are some African Americans that I was very surprised that were weary of MARTA and were not as informed and as educated as they should have been by some of the myths that come along with that. But listen, MARTA did a phenomenal job of getting people informed. They spent a lot of time and effort. I do think the education and the information process of this should have started earlier. We spent an enormous amount of time just educating people, like saying, hey, there's an election coming up. This was on the ballot. This is what it'll do.
4 weeks wasn't enough, right?
Yeah. So I definitely think that, you know, Chairwoman Charlotte Nash did the best that she could. She made a comment about they had a better message than us.
Chairwoman, I love you, but no, that's not true.
Let me ask you about that, though.
But I think the thing is, my message to the chairwoman is, stay at it, let's do it again, but start now.
What Theron is saying is we needed rage on our side, and there's only a few ways to do it, and using the racial undertones, as he said, is one way of igniting that rage. I felt like that would have done lasting damage to the county to do that. I think we've got to maintain the county's business brand and make sure that we can bring the county back together to have a civil conversation in the wake of this election to see about how we move forward. This is what our myth that Theron brought up, that it brings crime. Go to Lenox and Lindbergh and Brookhaven and Chamblee, and you will see highly desirable development. Look at the Beltline. It's going to be built around transit. It is booming. The biggest problem there is it's so expensive because of demand that there's no low-income housing there. So the idea that it brings in crime or lowers property value is false, and it takes time for those to sink in.
Let's not forget, there were not undertones. There was evidence that was presented that there were white voters in Gwinnett County who responded electronically and use words like coon, use the N-word, and basically said, I don't want more African-American, brown, criminals, people coming to our county. So we made a fundamental decision to not put that out there. I disagree with that because I think that that's where we are as a country right now. I do believe that people have got to get in the room and we've got to regroup. I think the debrief needs to happen, and we really need to continue to focus on the prize at hand, that is expanding transit to Gwinnett County.
Shifting to national politics for just a moment, Georgia Republican Senator Johnny Isakson was recently on Georgia Public Broadcasting and told Bill Nigut that the president's recent attacks on the late Senator John McCain were, in Johnny Isakson's word, deplorable. He has said that before. He said he would say it again, but this time he tied it directly to the president. The president has done this over and over again, though, Brian. So whether it's Johnny Isakson or anyone else, why has there been such a gradual approach among Republicans, do you think?
Because the president is wildly popular with the Republican base that these senators depend on, that these House members depend on to earn re-election.
But when it
That's
comes
why. To- it's because the numbers are very clear. And they get beat up on when they attack the president. People feel like, get in line with the president. He's doing the right thing. And they see criticism of Trump as criticism of his agenda, which they support.
But the question then becomes, okay, the president needs allies too. He has a staunch one in another Georgia senator, David Perdue, who has hewed to the president's line on just about everything. So couldn't Senator Perdue afford to say to the president, when it comes to John McCain, this is too much?
I bet you that David Perdue uses his capital man-to-man in private to discuss strategy. And he has hinted from time to time in the media that when he has an issue with the president, he takes it up with the president, just like Nikki Haley did on a few occasions.
True.
And I'll also say that
Nikki Haley was even more public about it than Senator Perdue has been.
Senator Perdue has said in the last month, a month and a half, that he supports the president's agenda. He likes the direction that he's taken the country. And I wish he said things differently sometimes. I don't like everything that he says. Now, that's milder, certainly, than what Johnny said. But it is Senator Perdue acknowledging that sometimes the president goes beyond social norms.
What's so interesting to me, Dennis, is that the Republicans are getting away with something that Democrats could never get away with. I want you to picture this. Can you imagine if President Barack Obama went out and said anything to insult anyone in our party? You would have every single person coming out, not only condemning him, pushing back, asking him to apologize. We would probably protest against him. And these are Democrats, right? So what it shows you, Dennis, is that there's no Republican Party anymore. There are no more compassionate conservatives. And I'm not putting words in Brian's mouth, but I think that the Republicans who are sitting by and not speaking up like Johnny Isaacson should be ashamed of themselves. But listen, you know, I think at the end of the day, Democrats have got to figure out a way to get back to the middle and some of these people who we lost during 2016 who voted for President Trump, and to try to make an argument to them that this man, this president, is just not mentally and morally fit to lead this country with some of the comments that he makes when he insults people like this. But hey, Dennis, the economy is good. Some of these white Republican voters are looking at their 401ks and they're seeing it up.
I bet some black Americans are seeing that too. They're in.
No, they are. And I'm probably definitely one of them. But I will never, ever compromise my financial and monetary gain for the morality of this country.
So,
and I feel that some Republicans who sit by silent and don't back up Johnny Isaacson and make, and I want to be clear, I'm not saying Brian did this, but make excuses and spin for this president's behavior are to be ashamed of themselves.
So real quickly, guys, if the economy continues to do well as we head into 2020 and suburban voters particularly take a look at a David Perdue campaign versus, let's say, a Stacey Abrams, although it could be somebody else, does James Carville's rule apply? It's the economy, stupid, with this president in the mix.
I think if the Mueller report comes out and if he continues to go, because we totally forget this, right? This is what this president is so amazing. If he is further and further implicated, tied to this corruption or this collusion that a lot of folks have claimed, then I do think that David Perdue is going to be in trouble. But if he's able to make it out scot-free and there's no there, and the economy is still thriving, it's going to be tough for Democrats to beat Senator Perdue in Georgia.
I have this conversation with members of the General Assembly a lot, and they're like, do you think I'm going to be hurt by X vote? You know, I say, look, in 2020, your fate will be determined more by how people feel about Donald Trump than they do about how you voted on some obscure issue that they may not ever hear about. David Perdue is surrounded by one of the best teams in Georgia politics, and they get that even that far up the ballot, he'll be number two after the presidential race on the Georgia ballot, that his fate is largely tied to President Trump. Now, I do think that Perdue's people plan on overperforming Trump in the state. Now, they think Trump's going to win Georgia, but they expect to do better than Trump in, say, the 6th Congressional District, which is sort of the northern arc of Atlanta, in the 7th District in Forsyth and Gwinnett. So I do think that in the suburbs, Perdue plans to run better, and there is a precedent for that. Karen Handel lost her congressional race, but she outperformed Governor Kemp on that same ballot. So I do think Perdue has to do that. On the Mueller report, I think that you are going to see Trump's team and Republicans if it says no collusion with Russia, but here's all these other really bad things, the Republican message becomes they have done a witch hunt for for 3 years about Russian collusion. This report proves it's not true and that all of this other stuff is irrelevant. And so I do think the economy next year will make a big difference. We are sort of due for a recession, which really concerns me. But David Perdue certainly has a pathway to victory here. Trump has a pathway to victory here. But both races will be extremely close. And what Republicans need is what Democrats do best, nominating some person who's too extreme, too out of touch, too much with the liberal zeitgeist of the National Party. That's what's going to hurt the Democrats the most here, even more, any more than anything we can do.
And we will be back with more of the Political Breakfast. Stay right here.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
And we are back with the Political Breakfast. Happy to have you with us. I'm Dennis Soher with Democratic strategist Theron Johnson and Republican strategist Brian Robinson, and this podcast comes to you because people like you support WABE. This is our pledge time. And if you enjoy this podcast, why not make a gift of support? And you can do that very easily at 678-553-9090, or you can pledge securely online at wabe.org/donate. And we all thank you. All right, guys, let's move to the Gold Dome. So much going on as we head toward sine die, the final gavel. Let's start with the abortion bill. Now, this has been advancing. It has attracted a lot of attention. It would ban abortions in the state after 6 weeks of pregnancy. Current state law limits it to 20 weeks. Later abortions would still be possible in cases of rape, incest, or danger to the life of the mother. Brian, opponents, including former House Minority Leader Stacey Abrams, have tried the same business argument that seemed to be so effective when it came to religious freedom bills over the years. She has said, look, businesses who are trying to attract female talent will choose not to be here. It doesn't seem to have caught hold in quite the same way as that argument when it came to religious freedom or RFRA bills. What's the difference with this one?
On this particular issue, it's one of deep personal conviction. And the membership of these business groups have diverse opinions, just like the rest of Georgia does. And their workforce has diverse opinions. And the business community has not taken the bait on Stacey Abrams' comments and weighed in on this. They've got other battles to fight during this session, including the airport bill, the Delta jet fuel exemption, sorry, the airline jet fuel exemption, not just Delta, and making sure that, you know, that the religious exemption legislation doesn't come back. So I don't know that this is a business issue. It's one of deep personal conviction, and people will put their – it's one of those things where people's own viewpoints will come out.
Well, business associations aside, do Republicans in the legislature, and particularly Governor Kemp, who is supporting this legislation, do they run the risk of losing suburban women whom they are trying to attract when it comes to the 2020 elections?
This is something that Governor Kemp ran on last year, mm-hmm.
He can't really not support it.
He's not only but he's not staying on the sidelines.
He's involved in it.
He is out there actively lobbying on this and pleading with members to vote. And it's a tough conversation because many of the members are saying, hey, this is not going to be great in my district. But for the governor, he's made it clear this is a matter of personal conviction for him. He believes he's right. It's not so much about implementing this law in Georgia. I think we all acknowledge this is not going to take effect, even if signed, because a court will hold it up. In the time being.
When you say hold it up, delay it.
Delay it from being implemented. Yeah. And so, but what many conservatives are looking for is a vehicle to challenge this through the federal court system, through the district court, the appellate court here in Atlanta, and then to the Supreme Court trying to overturn Roe v. Wade. So this is part of a bigger issue, I think.
Sure. If that's the idea, though, why bother even in Georgia, since other states have already passed bills that are similarly restrictive, and those challenges are already in the pipeline?
Great question. I think there are conservatives nationally who feel like the pipeline from here is a clearer path, because there are different appellate court circuits, and they feel like the best path is through the 11th Circuit in Atlanta to the Supreme Court. So that's what I've heard, and it makes sense.
But there's also this other political belief that Georgia is changing. Georgia is now truly a purple state. I've been saying for a long time, demographically, it's been a blue state. I think a lot of these legislators who are supporting this bill, Dennis, feel like if they do not get it done during this session, and if Democrats are able to pick up more and more seats in the House, a few more in the Senate, that they won't have the votes to pass this. And what's really going on here, Dennis, and we just got to call it out because that's what we do on this podcast, is you saw a governor in Governor Kemp who made a tremendous effort. And I want to publicly say this to say, hey, look, I want to reach out to Democrats. I want to reach out to cities and counties all across the state. I want to work with the mayor of Atlanta. I want to work with the CEO of DeKalb County and others. But now you see this pivot that we've been talking about on this podcast to now he's got to give some red meat to a conservative base of Republicans that helped him become governor. And what's really going on here is that what Brian is alluding to is they've got to go back to some of these conservative districts and they got to come out of this session and say, hey, you know, you just didn't spend time talking about medical marijuana and airline fuel tax and whether or not you should take over an airport. Look at what I voted for on this sort of pro-life agenda. And so the unfortunate thing for we as Georgians is that we're caught in the middle of this political game that Republicans are playing. But they're doing it, Dennis, because they are anticipating that no matter the outcome in 2020, there will be more Democratic seats, I believe, picked up in some of these rural areas and especially in the metro. The one thing that Brian has done a good job of saying on this podcast before, and I'll say it again for him, there's no way that this abortion bill helps Republicans bring back suburban women voters to their party. I will argue any conservative Republican in Georgia that this bill, which, by the way, most women don't even know that they're probably pregnant or not in six weeks. This is an attempt by the critics who are saying that to just ban abortions in the state of Georgia completely. But Brian just did a really good job articulating. I hope a lot of people who are listening is that this is sort of a political move, but it's also a legal move to the courts, where this is all out assault on Roe versus Wade in the National Supreme Court to try to make sure that Georgia is one of these states that try to pass a very divisive and controversial measure like this one.
And President Trump has said that he wants to overturn Roe v. Wade. He's been very open about it, and he won his re-election. He won election after saying that, and he has appointed judges to the court that would do that, presumably. I don't deny that it's a tough political issue. I don't think anybody in the General Assembly denies that it's a tough political issue, that it's not going to play well in parts of the suburbs. I think many of them, though, believe this with religious, not just political conviction, because they are moms and dads, and they've seen those ultrasounds. And I'm a father of a 2.5-year-old man, and it changed my perspective, too. And I saw my baby when she was that age. And I'm not going to get into whether or not we should do this. That's not my place, I'm not going to change anybody's mind. People know where they stand on this. And I have mixed feelings because I see both sides. But the more we know scientifically, the more we see little humans in those pictures.
Let's look at how this bill and others reflect the style of Governor Kemp. Governor Kemp, so far, appears to be taking a more active public role in legislation than your old boss, Governor Deal, did.
Yep.
It reminds some folks, including another one of your old bosses, Congressman Lynn Westmoreland, former Congressman Westmoreland, of the style of Governor Sonny Perdue or Governor Roy Barnes, both of whom in a general way were more hands-on. Things had to run through the second floor was the old saying. Governor Deal, at least publicly, although he often put in words at the right place, seemed to let the legislature work its will more, and then he said yes or no.
Yeah. And what's Deal's spokesman? Always Deal's spokesman, right? So let me spin you up here for a second. So my only spin of the day is he treated them with respect. He let them lead on issues that were important to them. He weighed in where he needed to help the state. And what the dirty little secret is, he had a limited agenda. He believed in doing stuff incrementally. And what did he do? He got everything he asked for passed. There is no editing tape on the floor of the Deal agenda. Everything he wanted got passed. And it is a model that I think that any administration should look at.
Let's take a couple of examples here really quickly. Governor Kemp has threatened to use executive power to loosen the restrictions on hospital competition in the Certificate of Need law, a very complicated issue. He has gotten involved personally in the abortion fight. He got involved in the voting machine bill, which is working its way through. But he has stayed on the sidelines on the airport takeover bill, at least so far, and he stayed on the sidelines in the Gwinnett Martyr referendum. This is a different kind of leadership style from Governor Deal, and I want to get your take on it, both of you.
Well, I think on the Martyr vote, he was really contemplating whether if he came out and supported it and encouraged people to vote yes at a time when he lost the county by 14 points. The thing that this governor was very, I think, sensitive to is whether he would hurt or help that effort. I think he also, knowing him the way that I know him, is that if he came out and said he didn't want it, then it would go totally against what we've seen, not only former Governor Deal, but current Speaker Ralston and former Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle and current Chairman Tanner and current Chairman Beach that have been pro-transit. That was one of the baffling things about Gwinnett County, is that you look at the Republican support behind the effort. On the airport takeover bill, I think that the governor is looking at that very closely. I think he has been very open to hearing both sides. He's met with Mayor Bottoms about this. He's met with Senator Jones, Burt Jones, about this as well. I think that he is—
Senator Burt Jones is the sponsor of the airport takeover bill.
Correct. And I know that the speaker has met with both parties involved, pro and opposed to this bill.
But the governor said when it came to MARTA particularly, and I believe in the airport bill too, I'm too busy being governor. Yet he was able to find the time, if you will, to push actively for the abortion bill, to say he was going to use executive power to loosen restrictions on the hospital certificate of need regulations.
Yeah, he was. And I remember reading that quote on Election Day in Gwinnett County. And I think it actually, I want to praise the governor for being able to quickly respond to a question that was posed to him, I'm assuming, when he was at an event. And so you're right. He's been busy being governor, pushing his agenda and what he believes is the people's agenda. So I want to be very clear. I'm not criticizing the governor for not getting involved in the MARTA referendum. I think I want to publicly thank him for not getting involved as of yet, taking a side on the airport bill, because I think what his posture has been is let's continue to let the process work itself out. But he has met with the mayor, and I know he's met with some folks from the mayor's team. And so we'll see how that ends up.
But the active approach on lots of issues rather than just a few is a little different than what we saw in the 8 years prior, isn't it?
Brian can actually speak to this better than I can. Listen, as a lobbyist who's registered, unlike some of my friends who are in this commentating world, I'm not talking about Brian, but other shows that I'm on. When you are lobbying in the legislature, let me just tell you the biggest difference from a lobbying standpoint. You knew where Governor Perdue was probably going to be because he had floor leaders who were very active. Governor Deal always had this sort of compassionate approach, but you kind of knew where the governor's office was going to be. But then towards the end, when Brian was not there anymore, I just used the casino bill. We could never, ever get a straight answer from the governor. I mean, he was very clear that religious purpose, he didn't really support
it. He didn't like the expansion of gambling.
He didn't like it, but he never got out there and worked against us. So with this governor, I think we got to give him time. I think he's got a capable staff. They're still trying to fiddle this out. And I would tell you, from a lobbyist standpoint, it's a different culture. I mean, I remember when you had Chip Rogers and others that implemented this hawk system.
Former Senator Chip Rogers.
Yeah, former senator. You know, they were kind of the ones that were running the show. So
the hawk system was one where legislative leaders could be appointed to any committee,
even
if they weren't on it.
And cut,
but that happened on the abortion bill.
Well, so that's what I'm getting to. So now what we're seeing is maybe a 2019 version of the quote-unquote hawk system, or maybe it's a less aggressive, a little bit more sensible version of it. But again, I think it's a very interesting time down in the Capitol right now, and I think that this governor has chosen how he wants to govern, and we'll see what happens.
First, let's acknowledge that this is his first session, and I don't care whether you are Roy Barnes, Sonny Perdue, Nathan Deal, that first session is a bear. You have a lot coming at you. There's a lot that you didn't know going in. And by about February, March, you're beginning to kind of get the swing of it. I think some of the issues that he's come out hard on in the last couple of weeks, in the future, he'll come out hard in the eggs and issues breakfast speech the first week of session, in the State of the State address.
You're talking about specifically certificate of need, I think, because that's one where the bill already hadn't made it, at least for this year. Now the governor, with a two-year session still ahead of him, is saying, hey, I'm going to use executive action if you don't do what I want.
And we'll see how that plays out with the General Assembly. I honestly don't know. How are they going to respond to the chief executive saying, do what I want or I'm going to do it anyway? I don't know. Maybe it's a great, you know, tactic that shows leadership. Maybe it's going to make them angry when they're already making a lot of tough votes at the behest of the governor, including the abortion vote. I don't know just yet what that blowback is going to be. But I think moving forward, you're going to see him do these things much more early in the session. And I think you'll see – look, a lot of the stuff he's coming out for now isn't going to pass necessarily this session.
This year, you mean?
This year.
He's got another year.
He's got another year of this session, then when they come back next January. So he's got a lot of runway to communicate with people. On the flip side, his opponents on these particular issues have a lot of runway to communicate with people as well. But one reason why Governor Deal did not get involved in issues publicly was because if he said, I'm for this, and then it got amended with a poison pill, he was stuck. He was cornered. He had to sign something they didn't want to sign. And so strategically, it's wise to sort of keep your opinions quiet as it's going through the process. And also, you cannot be seen to publicly lose on too many issues if you're the chief executive, because you risk losing a lot of face with the General Assembly. So I am fascinated to watch how the governor and his team is going to navigate this really tricky path, because they've got a lot at stake. They put a lot of cards on the table.
Let's quickly talk about the airport takeover bill, because that is advancing, but it's gotten complicated. It's almost like a cooking show. Stuff has gotten folded into the mix. And this is the fuel sales tax break for Delta, which was turned into a fuels tax increase on airlines in general, and then attached to the airport takeover bill. Delta very carefully said recently this will make the state less competitive and give commercial aviation reason to grow somewhere other than the state of Georgia. Very clear but diplomatic message. Theron, where does this go?
This has turned into a very complicated issue, Dennis, because what you just saw the Senate do was to attach the takeover language bill to the airline fuel tax, which we know Delta has been the one that sort of is always singled out. I think Southwest is the second largest airline in our state. I'm very confident that Mayor Bottoms is going to fight this, and I support her tooth and nails with this, that she needs to not compromise. She needs to continue to meet with every single legislator who will meet with her. She met with the governor. She's met with the lieutenant governor. She's had a couple meetings with the speaker. And she's also reached out to the House Democratic Caucus to really explain to them how detrimental it would be to our state and to our region, and more importantly, to our city, if the state really continues down this path.
Is this where the playing field is different, though, because then Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed came from the legislature. He had relationships there. He also had a good relationship with then Governor Deal. He had, in other words, the argument by some folks is he had more leverage than Mayor Bottoms has with the current state leadership.
I know them both very well. I worked for Mayor Reed, ran his campaign in 2009, worked for him. I was intimately involved with the campaign for Mayor Bottoms. I want to be clear, contrary to what Brian and some others may believe, I'm not on the city payroll and I did not work for this mayor. What has changed, Dennis, is I want to push back on this. It's not that it's the person in the mayor's office. It could be me. It could be Brian. It could be you. But none of us could really have a sensible, productive conversation and make people believe that while we have the world's busiest and most efficient airport, who's received awards for 16 years straight on the effectiveness and how it's being run, when you got a article coming out every single week almost about the ongoing federal investigation, people are being indicted, people are being publicly and politically prosecuted by these alleged indictments and when they're coming. To me, that is the difference where, so now you get a senator and Senator Burr Jones and others who can now push this and say, hey, look at this report that we've been able to do. While it's dated, but it gives you sort of these decades of ongoing investigations, but not a whole lot of convictions there. But it's been all these sort of recognitions of impropriety and people being indicted who had airport contracts. So the difference is this. I want to be very clear. Yes, Mayor Reed did a wonderful job of cultivating a great relationship with the city. He was effective at it. He worked at it. He was at the Capitol every single day. But this mayor is doing the same thing. What has changed is not the players. It's just that you got a cloud with an ongoing federal investigation that has been going on for a very long time. And it gives some, the critics will say, they support this airport, but it gives some merit that we really need to look into the authority bill.
I'll tell you, those headlines haven't helped the city's cause by any means. Certainly, Senator Jones held up the paper that day when it was on the floor because more indictments had come down or some other negative news. From everything that I've heard, the city is not doing a great job of lobbying at the Capitol. I think they're making some enemies there. And I don't know why. I don't know all the details. But there's been some tension there between Senate legislators and the city. The governor, of course, has stayed quiet on the airport takeover, but we do know that he is working to get the airline jet fuel exemption removed from the state takeover of the airport. He wants them separately.
Decouple them again.
He wants to decouple them. And so that may give us some insight into where he is on those issues.
And let me go back to what two things that Brian just said. What the Senate did was totally against the governor. So you have all these other bills moving, but what the Senate did in a committee to attach those two bills, the governor came out right away and said that he's trying to detach them because it's really two different conversations, right? But I want to slightly push back a little bit on Brian with this whole making enemies in the Senate. When I tell
that's just
you,
what I've heard.
I'm gonna tell you
more than I do.
Yeah, I'm going to say what I know. The people who are saying that the mayor is not lobbying for this, I mean, she has a robust lobbying team. I'm not a paid lobbyist. I have to always say that on these radio shows and TV shows. But the team that she has in place are a good group of individuals, men and women who are working hard. So there's this myth out there that there's some tension between the mayor and some senators, and it's not. Some folks actually, Brian, have said, because they don't know, that they want the mayor to do more. And I'm telling you that if you really look at her leadership style, we haven't talked about a lot with her leadership style lately. What she's done methodically is she's gone in to talk to these different people. The lobbyists are working around the clock, but they are not trying to upset the apple cart at a time where we know that it's going to all come down to whether or not Speaker Ralston will bring this bill up in the House or not.
Darren, you anticipated my next question. Will it come down to Delta and Speaker Ralston?
It will come down to three people, Delta, Speaker Ralston, and the governor.
The Senate will have a say in that. And, you know, there is some resistance to the jet fuel exemption separate of the state takeover of the airport amongst some of the Republican senators who don't like it and want to see some of that tax revenue come in and then be dispersed to rural airports or airports in other parts of the state. They're on the record about that. So they get a big say in this, too.
And that's it for this week's Political Breakfast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist, public affairs and government consultant, and former National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist, communications consultant, and former Deputy Chief of Staff for former Governor Nathan Deal. Thanks so much to you both.
Sunny Die is almost here.
And I'm going to rob Marta to Gwinnett, and I won't rob anybody.
And if you like this show, subscribe, and you can do that wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to rate us. That, of course, is a great way to make sure other people can find us. We'll be back in your feed and in your head soon with more nourishing political conversation. Be sure to join us.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.